A little after 6:15 on May 3rd happens to be Peter's birthday, so I thought I'd chuck that in. On May 3rd, and this is the May meeting of the Energy and Environment Committee, and Fawn, would you kindly call the roll, please? And then we'll do the pledge.
Amanda Jo Green,
Present.
Mary Worrell,
Here.
Al Bruno, not with us yet, Peter Criswell,
here.
Laura Petit,
Here.
So, Madam Chair, you have four of your members, you have a quorum.
Thank you. And with that, I'd like to ask that we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Would someone like to start say the pledge? Okay, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. And have the committee members had a chance to review the minutes and transcript of our April 5th and April 15th brief special meeting? I see a nod. I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes April 5th and of the special meeting of April 15th.
Thank you. All right. All in favor, please signify by raising your hand and or staying. Okay. Anyone oppose? Motion carried 4-0 with Legislator Bruno not yet here.
Legislator Bruno is joining us now.
Okay. With that, I would like to ask Tim DeGraff, Executive Director of the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, for an update.
Hi, everybody. A couple of items here. We held our HHW event at our, we actually did it at the New Paltz Transfer Station on Saturday, April 24th from 8 to 12. Usually we would have it longer, but we tried to limit, you know, smaller amount of people. We serviced approximately 229 households. The next event is scheduled for the Ulster Transfer Station in Kingston, and that will be June 27th, which is a Sunday, and registration is opening this week. This past Saturday, we did a compost bin and rain barrel sale. We actually had about 150 pre-orders, and we sold 112 compost bins and 80 rain barrels, so that was very successful. Our e-waste, we for the month of April, we had three Saturdays. We had 407 drops of e-waste, so carloads. Angie wanted me to pass along that spring classes. So far, 68 residents have already participated in the free spring classes virtually. The last one will be Wednesday, using compost in the garden, and there's already 20-plus residents signed up for that. And she wants to note that May 2nd through the 8th is International Compost Awareness Week, and the Recycling Outreach Team has planned social media outreach campaign all month long. On the operations side, I just wanted to make everybody aware that we received our Ulster Transfer received his permit renewals and modifications. One of the items that that affects is we have now ordered our building so that it can be installed for, it's going to double as a recycling education center and as a compost bagger building. So that's really good to get that going. That's all I have.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? With that, I would like to move to the resolutions for session coming up next week, May 18th. Actually, I think it's more like 2 weeks, but we'll start with resolution number 156, appointing. No, that's not right.
Yes.
Oh, appointing members to the Recycling Oversight Committee. Sorry. Fawn, I don't have the resolutions pulled up. Would you mind just filling in a little detail on that? So that
sure. It's to be determined, the seats that are open. And right now, hang on. 2, 4, 6. Hang on. The seats that are open right now, there's an at-large member at seat and a commercial or institutional sector seat open.
So I'd like to ask Legislator Petit.
Can I move it for discussion?
Yes, please. Thank you.
I move it for discussion.
And seconded by Legislator Bruno. Oh, okay. We'll get you next, Mary. Legislator Petit, could you just help us understand, do we have people? Have we advertised? Where are we in this process?
When we did the RRA board appointments, we had asked all the applicants if they would be interested if they didn't make it onto the agency board. So I guess procedurally, that would be up to you. You know, we could always go into executive session to discuss those candidates, you know, or we could go out and advertise. I mean, procedurally, I submitted the resolution, but I'm not sure where you want to go from here. We do have 5 very viable candidates.
Do they fill the vacancies? Do they qualify to fill the vacancies?
They do, yes. Yes.
All right. Let me take the pulse of the committee. Legislator Criswell.
Yeah, just a question. I guess a procedural question. Would it be wise for us to actually talk to the folks that we're interested, get them on board with it, get their names, get their resumes, and then pass this resolution as a resolution that actually has people attached to it? I'm not understanding the idea of passing it with TBDs in it.
Anyone else?
I mean, that would be my preference, yes. I'd even like to, you know, relist it in case somebody missed it and is interested in being on this committee. We could move it to next month, and we could also schedule the interviews at that point.
And if we have recommendations, we can fill in the blanks, and we could probably even do that ahead of time. How do the rest of the committee members feel?
I just want to say I really like that idea because we had such great folks lined up, and I think we could easily fill it with wonderful people who are really dedicated and committed to this.
Great.
I agree with Legislator Criswell.
Okay. And I see Legislator Waro nodding. We will take no action. Is that correct, Fawn?
Ma'am. And you have the resumes on the OneDrive, but I can send them to you again as an attachment if you want to just freshen your thoughts about them and see, you know, who you remind yourself about the resumes.
And just so there's no question, maybe we can put it on the website or whatever we do to, in case there's someone else who would like to apply.
I believe it's on our Acela program.
Okay. Very good.
But I'll double check. All right.
Thank you. Resolution number 227, amending capital project 568, the electric bus charging infrastructure project, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute an amended customer project commitment with the New York Power Authority, and amending capital project 568, Department of Public Transportation, UCAT. Would entertain a motion? Legislator Bruno, motion. Second?
I'll second it.
Okay, any discussion?
I just wanted to note that there is a significant New York State reimbursement attached to this. So that is great. You know, $394,000 attached to it, or almost $395,000. So I always like to see New York State reimbursements attached to our bonds. So,
I kind of have a little bit of a question. First of all, I support it 100%, but I question it at the same time. Basically, this resolution is just saying that reiterating what we already said in a previous resolution. Isn't that right?
It's a little different, and I would like someone from Department of Environment who might be more familiar with the details. I know that transportation did a lot of work, and they were in close consultation. Amanda, would you be able to fill us in a little?
Happily, thank you. Since the time of our initial the resolution last year, so last March, we have several kind of different projects that we needed to take into consideration with the design for this. The first one being the transit electrification study. We now have a study that maps out a future 10 years for us to look at how to best electrify our transit fleet. And what we've been able to do by revisiting the design for this project is to essentially future-proof the electrical systems at the UCAT facility in order to enable us to build out to the extent we believe we need to for 10 years in the future. It also, since that last March, when we initially, again, scoped this project, we have had the opportunity where we'll be receiving some state money to help install solar at that facility. That also required some significant considerations with the electrical system of how to work that into some pretty major, we really need to upscale the electrical system of the building several times over in order to accommodate charging the buses. And it also allowed us to ensure that we're thinking about generators, whether it's just for the building backup or eventually if we need a generator sized for that facility, which could be used to, if the power grid goes down, you know, Al, you're smiling. Because you have to think about all these contingency plans as we're thinking about, you know, transitioning from diesel fuel. So the additional year allowed us study time, time to revisit it and really know what we need to do to not just accommodate the buses that are coming this year, but for, you know, the 10-year plan.
I think it's a smart idea. If I can just follow up a little bit, Chairman Manager.
Yeah, please.
Okay. So I was smiling because I caught a certain irony in this thing. I agree. I mean, future-proofing the building for, you know, what's coming down the road in 10 years, it makes sense. You know, putting one charger in per bus right now is just kind of like, it's not very insightful because we know where it's headed. And I like the idea of the solar panels in that particular thing because it will offset the charging of the buses. The irony that I smiled at was that the generators, what are these generators going to be powered with?
I had if I may, I had the same thought in that, well, maybe we should be looking at battery storage because that is extremely reliable and we have someone to charge it. So to be continued, but
I just know most large scale generators of that nature are generally powered by diesel fuel. They usually have big diesel, Detroit diesel engines on them. So it's kind of like offsetting the whole purpose of having the buses in the first place. If we need to run them on diesel generators.
Well, that would only be in the case of an outage.
Well,
and you know, we really have time.
Well, generators need to be run. They need to be run all the time for testing so that they're maintained. There's a certain amount of maintenance that comes with them, which all that maintenance, they typically, I know they, and where my facility where I work, they run the generators every week. And they run them for a half an hour to an hour each time. So that amount of carbon we need to consider and see whether it's actually offsetting the idea of using the generators, using the electric buses.
Amanda.
If I may, I appreciate those points because they're very good. Generators have to be exercised. And we should be looking at the fuel that we're thinking about for that. At this point in time, there is an existing generator at the building for the building facilities. And this would be allowing that generator to connect into the proper place in the electrical system and designing the electrical system to better accommodate the generator. And if a larger generator is needed in the future, again, that connection, it would be properly designed to accommodate that. I think that nobody wants to see a situation. No one wants to see a situation where we are using diesel generators to charge battery electric buses. That is kind of madness. I believe that point fully. However, I feel as we have learned lessons about the reliability or unreliability of the electric grid in certain cases after watching the events unfold in Texas in the recent past, I feel that these are contingencies that I think everyone thinks that we should be cautious and erring to in order to be able to accommodate. But I very much think we should be doing the math on the fuel use.
I think financial use as well, because this is, in my opinion, I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with the electric buses and the electric fleet completely. I just want to see it done. I want to see if we're going to do it. Let's do it using some common sense. You know, not just because it's electric, everybody jumps on it. The electric that comes down the wires right now comes from, you know, mostly gas, oil, and coal plants. So they're not as globally as efficient as we might think, but they're going in the right direction. The battery object is a good idea, but has anybody seen what an environmental disaster it takes to make those batteries? It's just not in our backyard, but do some research. It's pretty horrific what it takes to make those batteries. And not to mention to recycle the batteries at this point, they're not recyclable. So we have to look, if we're going to be look at this whole thing in an energy and an environmental standpoint and a way of looking at it, I think we need to look at all of the pieces of the puzzle before we start trying to put it on the box. You know, we just really need to not just do feel good things because, oh, this is, you know, a really good idea. In the long run, it may not be. I think we really need to examine it, especially when we're dealing with our taxpayers' money to make this happen. And I believe me though, I'm not against this. I just think we need to look at it a little harder. Like, it sounds to me at the rate you're going, we're going to end up with a new bus garage. You know, you'll need all new electric. I know there was discussion whether they were going to be indoors under a pavilion, putting a new roof on it so that it can handle the solar. You're building a new garage. If you want to build a facility like that for that purpose, that's not a bad idea, but maybe we should look at it in that manner.
I do want to. Go ahead, Amanda, because I'm sure what you're going to say is more relevant.
So I will offer that this is being done in tandem with a study to look at the future needs of UCAT, not just for electric buses, but as far as fleet maintenance and storage. And that study, UCAT, along with the planning department, have been looking at. And it's very much good timing in that that study has been progressed at the same time as the transit electrification study. So we're in a unique picture in that we really do have this map that we've spent a good year working on this to have a very good lay of the land for a 10-year plan for this. So we feel like this is a very solid way to do it once and really do what we need to do at this facility.
I just want to go a step further and remind everyone that the state climate action law, the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, is being rolled out. This is the year that they're developing the details, but overall it is saying 70% renewables by 2030 and significant greenhouse gas emissions. So we're going to have to be able to design systems that use beneficial electrification. And there's also a number which I can't quote off the top of my head, but the amount of battery storage that will be necessary for 24/7 reliability. So that transition is underway and should be informed by some of the concerns that Legislator Bruno just raised. And I had a conversation recently with the sheriff and he's raised others. So all of those need to, this is the year for the state decisions to be made on how this will be rolled out. The schedule is pretty clear. But the details are being informed by, I think, 8 advisory panels and 3 working groups. And they are advising the Climate Action Council, who's responsible for the implementation plan. So please, if you have comments that you think they may not be considering, get them in. They're still taking comments for another couple weeks, and then they'll issue documents for public comment, the same as we do. We take comments while a law is being developed or an implementation plan is being developed, and then we take comments after it is issued, before it's acted upon. So, you know, that's a bit of a side, but it's very important because we're in the middle of a transition. We want to get it right. So I really appreciate everyone's comments on this. But are we ready to call the question? Yes. Okay. So now we are on. This is resolution number 227. Electric bus charging infrastructure project. All in favor, please signify by raising your hand and or saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Okay. The next resolution, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 1 of 2021. A local law amending various provisions of local law number 1 of 2020, a local law amending the code of the County of Ulster to include mandatory food scraps composting by large generators. And that public hearing would be held on Tuesday, June 15th. At 7:10 p.m. Can we move for a discussion?
So moved.
Moved by Legislator Criswell and seconded by Legislator Petit. I just want to point out that the current law for generators of 1 ton per week or more of food waste is scheduled to go into effect in July, July 1st, which is why we would need, you know, there is a time constraint on this. So let's thank you, Fawn. Let's look at the provisions. I think there are only three of them, and see if anyone has any concerns. So this is the food scrap recycling law, and the very first. I don't think there were any changes here. Let's see.
Chairman Green, can I just have a quick question? Are we currently voting on the public hearing, right?
Right.
Okay. I just want to be clear. We're not actually voting on any of the content of this.
You're right. All we need to do you want to do it in the other order to look at the,
I think we should just say yes. I mean, we should vote on the public hearing and then move on to, if we're going to have discussion about the local law, we should have discussion about the local law.
I agree with the legislator as well. This is just a public hearing.
All right. So, and if we need to, we can go back and change it. But for now, since we've moved this and seconded it, is there any further discussion on the public setting a public hearing? All right. All in favor, please signify by raising your hand and or saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. A motion carries unanimously. All right. Now, did I skip the, let's see. We set the public hearing.
So 241 is the next resolution.
Yeah, but what happened to before we set the public hearing?
There was no resolution in our packet that had anything to do with discussing the law. It was just setting the public hearing.
Fawn, didn't you send me the actual, not just setting the public hearing, but I thought you sent, I remember earlier today reading the changes law, in the law.
The law is in your file as backup, because that's what will be discussed. Do you want to?
Okay. Yeah, let's take a look at the changes. And if we have to, we'll go back and change this. But I expect that when we look at the changes, if we have to amend them, we will. But can we look at the actual amendment to the law?
Give me one moment to share my screen. Okay. So that's the law. These are the proposed changes to the law. I don't know if Amanda wants to go down.
There are only about three of them, and they're a strike through. Here's the first one.
Date.
Thank you.
And if I'm remembering, if I may, Chairman Green, if I'm remembering this right, we did this because we thought it was too heavy a burden to place on these facilities during COVID, and we were trying to move it forward for them to make it more manageable. Is that correct?
Hold it still for a minute, please. We have amended this law once during the height of COVID because we moved the date forward even for the 2 tons a week. And the Department of Environment has now had some direct experience with generators for 2 tons or more. And they will go, the enforcement or the law will apply to them as of January 1st, or did apply to them as of January 1st of this year. And at that time, we expected the 1 ton or more generators to apply to them in July and the others subsequent. And there, as we look at these changes, proposed amendments, and hopefully this will be the last time we have to amend this law, a couple points of interest will come up, but I think it helps to just look at the proposed changes. And I do want to say that I believe the state law is going into effect January of 2022. So this would more or less put us in alignment with the state law, except that we have already started for the approximately 26 very large generators, which is 2 tons or more, and some of them are considerably more, such as SUNY New Paltz, which was already composting. So the first change, the first amendment, is that from generators producing 2 tons or per week to 0.5 tons a week, and that was going to be complete by July 2023, but the Department of Environment in a memo requested that we move this up to January of 2024. And below you'll see the sequence of changes. So let's go to...
Chairman Green, if I may, just to add to that. One of the... we are currently regulating generators more than 2 tons per week, which is great. And it's been a... we have not heard of anyone who had been notified about the law requirements that is having any difficulty with that. So that is a good sign. There is some sensitivity to regulating this next cohort, still while we're kind of coming out of some of the challenges of COVID. However, there's also a rather kind of substantial timing issue when it comes to working with the state regulation. We have used up to date some of the state's organic resource inventory locator, and they are coming into a pattern where they're going to be publishing that data every year, June 1st. The law requires that we give generators 3 months of notice. Also, we feel like it's important to kind of look at those lists, see if they're kind of capturing the businesses that we think are here, look at the lists from the prior year, figure out if we're adding businesses or subtracting businesses, and having a July 1 date to begin regulating does not match well with that June 1st publishing of the updated lists from the state. So that's a major driver here as far as the timing goes.
And let's see, if we could go to where the changes are, I have one other question. I think the strike-throughs are in another section.
I see.
Okay. The January 2021 is complete. Amanda, if you wouldn't mind, can you just give us an idea of right now with the Pollution Prevention Institute data and any other data you have for the next cohort, 1 ton or a week, well, for all four cohorts, could you say approximately how many food waste generators there are for greater than 2 tons, 1 ton, 3/4, and 1/2 ton.
It's, I can give you for greater than 1 ton and greater than 2 tons.
Okay.
Where there are about 30 in each cohort.
Okay.
And I can get the other numbers for you. It just takes one more step. That's.
But, yeah, if you wouldn't mind, because I want people to realize that the numbers do go up considerably as the amount of food waste generated goes down. And at some point, some of the local restaurants will be impacted. The larger numbers tend to be food waste processors, I believe supermarkets, and schools, institutions, institutional cafeterias, SUNY New Paltz, as I mentioned, et cetera. And then when you have it, the 3/4 and the 1/2 ton. But as you can see, the first change was already made, and so there's no strike through. But instead of July, for the 1 ton, instead of July 2021, the proposal is to move that to January 1st, 2022. And that would coincide with the state law, which is all 2 tons or more. They don't go down to 1/2 ton, but in Ulster County, we already have experience that it works, and we have a collection system that has capacity, and we have facilities that have capacity, and we want to divert as much waste as possible without making a hardship for anyone. And so that's what we've tried to do. And we held very inclusive stakeholder meetings, a conference, and then the required public hearing, and then a second public hearing to move the date because of COVID last year. So now we want to renovate this so that the 3/4 ton would begin in January 2023, and the 1/2 ton would begin in January 2024, giving them ample time to giving Department of Environment ample time to reach out and do the education and outreach and inform people. And they would have ample time to work with their hauler or keep their hauler for garbage and get another hauler, or decide to compost on site. And that's where the agency could come in with educational programs and peer match programs, because there's a lot of successful on-site composting already going on. So, Amanda, were you able to find those last two?
I'm sorry, I'll share them with you later. I have to pull them out of the state database. I apologize.
All right. Any questions on those changes? Because I want to kind of take it step by step, and then we'll vote on well, we did vote on, but if there's any problems, we can go back and change the vote during the course. All right. So the next change is there we go. I think it's coming up now. Right there. Ulster County may waive the requirements of paragraph B if the county determines that compliance with the requirements of paragraph B, which we can go back and look at if we need to, would result in an extraordinary financial hardship to the large food scrap generator, or that other unique circumstances justify a waiver. Originally, we had focused on post-consumer food scraps causing contamination. So all the food that's prepped in the kitchen and at a restaurant that scraped off plates, but for example, in a food court, if there is a place for recycling and a place for trash and then a place for compost, people may include things that are not compostable in a somewhat unsupervised setting. Although there are places along, I think it's the New Jersey Turnpike, where they do food waste composting. That came up while we were developing the law. It's possible, but the experience at SUNY New Paltz, who have been composting for several years very, very successfully and reusing takeout containers that the students trade in for a clean one, they've really had very high success in the dorms and in even the cafeterias, but it's the food courts and the unsupervised areas where the contamination where the contamination is high. And so this is leaving it to the department to determine hardship rather than specifically citing post-consumer food scraps, which, by the way, the state does not distinguish. And and just trusting the department to determine when a waiver is justified. Is that correct? Is that your, I see your hand, Legislator Bruno. I just want to see if I said that right, according to Amanda.
Yes, it also, the way it was written, the revision also gets to a kind of issue with how it was written, which was that if you had an operation and you wanted to waive them, you could only waive them for post-consumer food scraps. They would still be required to compost the pre-consumer food scraps. And that was a little bit of a trick in the this gets to some of that kind of, so if there was a unique circumstance and a waiver was justified, it would be a waiver for the entire operation and not just for post-consumer. And even the financial hardship language was tied up in that post-consumer. So it kind of corrects that, which I think was not the original intention in the drafting, but it irons out that issue. Also, just to address the next condition here, which is financial hardship, the polystyrene law has the same guidance, part A here, subpart A, as far as gross income. And that was very much a strong request from the health department, was to have that in the law, to have the actual financial, the number in there. And then subpart B, that mirrors the state law, so that there is also some sensitivity to really increasing cost of disposal.
Okay, hold on, let's stay there for a minute, please. Legislator Bruno, you had your hand up.
Yes, Chairman Green, I did. And my concern, honestly, this is all nice. We've already hashed this over. It's to the point where it's a public hearing. We already voted on this as a public hearing. And I think we're kind of beating a dead horse, so to speak, right now at this point. I think we should move on to the other resolutions and then go back to this at a later date after the public hearing if need be. But to do this right now is really not doing anything. I'm sorry. I appreciate it, but we're going to be here at 10 o'clock tonight with this.
Yeah, I agree. We did have a chance to read this, and we do have other people here at the meeting who are getting ready to give reports.
I'm sorry. I thought there were only three changes, and it would be easy to go over. But I hear you, and unless anyone has any objection, we set the public hearing. And we can reconsider any details after we hear from the public. So sorry, Vaughn. Thank you for your help with that. And now, let's see. The water quality resolution. And that is resolution number 241, urging the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to protect water quality in Ulster County and require the New York City Department of Environmental Protection to offer detailed alternatives to the release of turbid water into the lower Esopus. Do I hear a motion to consider this? Motion by Legislator Criswell, seconded by Legislator Bruno. Any discussion?
My question is this a memorializing resolution? Is it really just something saying that we support, you know, examining this problem? I mean, that's really what this is, right?
Looks to me.
Yes. Okay. I mean, I'm in full support of it. I just wanted to make sure.
Yes.
Where's the there in this resolution? The there is really us just calling out the problem and saying, well, we support looking at it.
Yes. Legislator Bruno.
Yeah, there is a public comment time frame that's very close, very short. So this is a memorializing resolution per se, as we're answering the public comment in our forum, basically. We're giving our input to the public comment section of the state.
And, all right.
Thank you.
So hearing, yes, Amanda, please go ahead.
And thank you for continuing to work on this. I think I really appreciate, you know, all the attention. In the first and second whereas, in the second whereas, there's reference to the consent order proceedings. And the last part of that whereas is that it was done behind closed doors without participation. And I think may be better placed in the first whereas, where really it was what was done without public participation or the seeker process or any input from any stakeholder was between 2006 and 2010. The reestablishing of the use of the release channel. I've been very involved in this issue for about 10 years. And when I just think through it kind of from a detail point, I would move that clause to the first whereas. And I'm happy to provide that to anyone who would want to review that.
Legislator Bruno?
Vaughn, can this be done and still make it to the full legislature in time?
Absolutely. You folks can.
I don't have any issue with that. I think that's fine. I mean,
you can vote that amendment tonight and I'll do it, and turn it in with that amendment.
Okay, super. So,
we need somebody to move to make that amendment.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second. Yeah, go ahead, Mary.
As provided by Amanda LaValle. And all in favor of resolution number 241, please signify.
First the amendment. First you have to vote for the amendment and then on the resolution as amended.
Okay. On the amendment, please signify by raising your hand and or saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, the amendment carries. And now on the resolution, number 241, all in favor? Please raise your hand or say aye. Anyone opposed? Okay. Legislator Romero, did you say aye or raise your hand? Okay.
And I want to remind you all that tomorrow at 1 o'clock at Diamond Mills, there is a press conference about this topic with the county executive, and you've all been invited.
Do we need to RSVP this?
I don't believe so. I think you can just show up with your mask.
Okay. So thank you for that reminder. That resolution carries. And before we go into new business, I would like to, I think we had a request from Don Markle to speak on composting. He can again at the public hearing, but he's patiently sat through this much of the meeting, so I wanted to recognize Don.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Long time no see.
Yes. Thank you for hearing me. I guess my biggest concern is recovery and their compost. I don't know if this is something that you use here, go somewhere else above and beyond, but what they're doing with their compost is they're monopolizing it so that only one person is allowed to get it. Now, I have a small business, just a one-man crew, and I have a lot of customers that want this compost, but we're not being sold the compost in a very small amount. Meanwhile, I don't want to throw in too many names, but the head of operations brother hauls 20 ton of compost out of there per day, and I'm allowed 1 ton. Now, so I don't know if it's something that you guys deal with, or do I have to go somewhere else about this?
I think likely it would be appropriate to go into executive session to discuss this. How do others feel about that?
I just want what's fair and to get to the bottom of it is all.
I'll move to go into executive session for purpose of discussion.
I'll second that.
Okay. Don, no, thank you for the information. We will.
You can invite Chris and you can invite Don into your executive session, but I believe your attorney has something to say.
Okay, Legislative Counsel Ragucci, please advise.
Sure, and sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to just address one point. I mean, the purpose of executive session is particularly outlined in the open meetings law. If a member of the public is just, if he's going to present some concerns he has and at this point, they just are concerns. As far as I'm aware, they're his observations or his concerns regarding certain facts that he believes to be true. At this point, I'm not sure if it would be a valid basis to go into executive session. He can present his concerns and then, and then the discussion could proceed.
Legislator, go ahead.
Question. While he's a member of the public, he's an employee of the department we're discussing. So does that make him a public member or not?
Well, I am not employed there.
Oh, I thought you were employed there. I apologize.
Oh, no.
Okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were because you spoke with such confidence.
No, I own a small dump trailer business is what I'm saying is, I come in there, I have a lot of customers that want this stuff, but we're not being allowed it. And it's not just myself. It's every other small hauler out there, they're monopolizing it and basically lining the pockets of the head of operations brother who also works there.
And if you pull up the UCRA website now, you'll see that it says, sorry, no compost available. And I've been getting photos that there are trucks going out with compost on them, and an audio of them refusing to sell to a customer saying that they don't have any. So I don't know how you'd like to proceed with this.
In my eyes, being a, person of the public and a resident, it's theft. And it's not fair to every other resident who wants it.
Let's hear from council.
Sure, and I appreciate the recognition, Chairman Green or Chairwoman Green. To Mr. Markle, through the chair, have you addressed this issue with the Resource Recovery Agency board at all? Have you attended any of their meetings?
I have not, no. You know, and from my gatherings, it's not going to get me anywhere because they're pretty keen with the head of operations. So,
okay.
I do want to say that as a legislator in Rosendale, I've also gotten calls with similar concerns, and I referred them back to the agency, and then didn't hear again. But
if I may, I've called there. I've tried to speak to the executive director, and they tell me it's I have to speak with the head of operations, which is who is basically allowing what's going on. So it's a waste of time because his brother is the one who is monopolized it.
Legislator Bruno, and I just want to say to Don Markle, I think that, you know, it is a sensitive issue in that it does involve personnel. And I think you've probably been as clear as you can be. So I'm going to leave the rest of the discussion to the committee right now and recognize Legislator Bruno.
Thank you, Madam Jo. My question is this, since the RRA is an autonomous agency with, we have limited oversight over it. I'm not sure whether we even actually can do anything. This may be something, or even if the county as a whole can do anything, what you're describing is, in my opinion, not a legal opinion, but an ethics violation in the department, in that department. So again, I don't know whether even the county's ethics board can address this either. It's kind of like a catch-22 that the legislature created by giving them autonomy.
Legislator Criswell.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Legislator Bruno, because this brings me back to the exact thing that I keep asking for is what is our relationship to this agency? And I know that we had talked about actually getting a really clear picture of what we are as an oversight organization or how does that work? Legislative Council, I know we talked about that at one point.
Can please direct response, Council.
Sure. So to your question, Legislator Criswell and Legislator Bruno, I think you pretty much intimated what the answer is, and that is very limited. The legislature obviously has the power to appoint members to the board to set terms as set forth in the statute. And as you know, we just went through an appointment process for a new member last month. And the direct oversight by the legislature, unlike other agencies, is very limited with regard to the RRA for very specific reasons. The state Senate and Assembly wanted to create a resource recovery agency that was in some ways insulated from political winds of the day. And there are several attorney general opinions that I've read that actually cash it in that way. And to that end, they set up and passed a very strict statute, which really gives the legislature a limited role in the RRA process. RRA members, board members, can be removed pursuant to the state statute in any manner that other county officers can be removed. So, for example, there is a provision that, you know, sets forth a basis to remove the county executive, just by way of example. But it is an extremely high bar to make, and removal of any officer is an extremely tough case to make. So to that end, I would just conclude by saying, you know, our oversight is extremely limited. We can certainly, you know, investigate. We can certainly, accept complaints like this and then investigate them and come up with a formal conclusion to an investigation. But we really don't have a lot of oversight authority other than the appointment of the board members.
May I respond?
Go ahead.
I just thank you so much, Legislative Council. I appreciate that. And I just want to say that I'm feeling frustrated for Mr. Markle right now because he's come to us with a serious question, and I feel like we can't give him a straight answer because of the way that this is set up. So I just wonder where this citizen who is a taxpayer can go to get some sort of answers to his questions.
I'm going to recognize Legislator Petit, and then I'm going to put myself in the stack because I had a similar situation recently.
Thank you. And I would like to thank Mr. Markle for stepping forward. I mean, I've been getting phone calls, but he's the first one who's actually, you know, come out publicly to say anything. And with that, you know, we do have a contractual agreement with the Resource Recovery Agency to develop and provide a solid waste system for the county. So in some aspects, they are a vendor. We brought this up with Peckham Materials when they were violating the PLA agreements that we were supposed to be having. So my question through the chairwoman to council is, how do we begin moving forward with an investigation to see if there is any gross ethics violations and to proceed with removing board members if we find that necessary? We've just been discussing it for about 6 weeks now, maybe 2 months. So where do we go from here? How do we proceed?
Because I would like to add something that I think you could answer all at once, counsel, if that's okay. I recently had a question for the ethics board. It was not a charge. It was not any accusation of misdoing or anything, but it was a question to prevent the questioner wanted to prevent a problem for themselves or their business. And one of the roles of the ethics board is to offer, I think it's an advisory, not decision, but it's a term that has advisory. They can advise if someone has an ethics question. However, the ethics board has not been convened in a long time. It will need to be convened. Legally, it should be convened twice a year, and it will need to be convened because we're all submitting, as Charlie Landy suggested earlier, he was going to get his disclosure forms, and we all need to submit our disclosure forms. One of the functions of the ethics board is to review the disclosure forms. And so as part of counsel's counsel to us, it seems to me that that the UCRA would be subject to ethics board decisions, but I forget what you just the idea that if we had to, we could remove a board member. There are those connections, and if you needed to research that, at least there would be an answer. It wouldn't just be, we can't undertake this and neither can anyone else. There has to be a place to bring a concern. Legislator Bruno, and then counsel, make a list of our questions.
This is a kind of a straightforward question. Legislator Green, I'd like to address counsel, if I may, through your chair. within an autonomous, essentially a business because money changes hands back and forth, are they subject to the district attorney's oversight? So what he's describing, and again, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a judge, but it almost sounds criminal in a lot of ways. And I think that would probably be better suited to go through the district attorney's office.
If I may, Madam Chairwoman. So, and it's an excellent question. And without, of course, making any judgment on the merits of any such claim, you're absolutely, we're all subject to the district attorney's jurisdiction in this county with respect to criminal matters. So if a crime is being committed, whether it, you know, not making an assessment on whether this is a crime or not, then that certainly could be subject matter for an investigation by the district attorney's office and potential charges.
Sorry, I'm getting feedback. I'm going to just.
Thank you.
I think I got it.
Yeah. Anything more?
If I could just address the question relating to investigations. The legislature has very broad authority with respect to investigation. We can call for an investigation, either an independent investigation, or we can investigate matters ourselves as a body with our staff internally. And to that end, if a resolution was going to be proposed, and passed, that would commence. Essentially, start the clock of any investigation that this body wishes to take.
So we can do that with a motion here tonight?
It would have to. I would suggest it would be in the form of a written resolution.
Legislator Bartel.
Yeah, and to follow on that, I mean, the legislature's investigative power is broad. I mean, we have subpoena power. And we have used it in the past. But I just want to say, I do think there is a portion of this discussion that warrants an executive session discussion. So I know I can't make that motion. That would be the committee members. But and I'm hopeful that that'll happen. But before that, I also want to say that while the agency is autonomous and the setup of the agency was created to provide that buffer from political influence. There's no doubt that we're connected in ways that we aren't with other organizations. And I mean that to say that the financial arrangement that results in the potential net service fee that requires that the legislature make up any deficit in an operating budget makes it of critical interest to each of our constituents and the taxpayers as a whole. And, you know, I too want to thank Mr. Markle for coming forward and putting his face on the camera and raising the concerns, and his concerns do deserve to be investigated in some form. But I think that that we share concern. Any concern about the agency is a concern, whether it's criminal or not. I'm not even going to speak to the nature of the allegation. Even if the allegation is such that it would affect the bottom line or profit or anything, it's a concern to us. And I have things that I want to say, which I said last month, that are most definitely executive session material as they relate to specific personnel. So. I'm hopeful that someone will make a motion at some point to go into an executive session.
Well, we didn't, but no vote was taken.
Not tonight yet.
We did, Mary. Legislator
did.
Oh, okay. I want to just say one other thing that I just want to remind people, and then we'll decide if we're going to go in to executive session. And I just want to be sure that, if you say that you believe it needs to be, then we'll go into executive session and you can say what it is, and council can verify that or not. But I want to remind folks that a while ago, the comptroller's office let us know that they were doing I don't know what this routine, but it was on their schedule to do an audit of the UCRRA. I don't know where that stands. I don't know if this is an issue, but it is a financial matter. So I just wanted to remind everyone that the comptroller's office is at some point in the process of auditing the UCRRA in terms of finances. So what is the will of the committee with regard to going into executive session?
I mean, I would vote yes on, but I think I see that our legal counsel's looking a little stressed, so I just want to make sure we're are we okay to do this? I mean, I'll just keep talking about it publicly, but I think part of the concern was the information we have, we don't want it to be digested by the public until we can, you know, sort of follow up on it. And I mean, just to add to that, I mean, there are public funds involved in this composting operations. We just got a significant grant for them, and they've been reaping the benefits of, what was it, like $280,000. So, you know, there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I'll defer to Legislator Bruno. I thought he was going to raise
Well, my thing is, since, and again, I'm not a lawyer, you are, since this could be deemed part of an investigation, we should be able to go into executive session to discuss the matters of that investigation.
So I do, just before I comment on that, I do have a question. There is an active case pending, obviously, against the RRA, which we're not going to be addressing, you know, in this meeting, at least in this moment. But the person that made the complaint identified a certain employee of the RRA, and without naming names, of course. Am I correct in understanding that the employee that was named in that lawsuit is the person that is now being referenced in this complaint that we're hearing today, or is it his brother?
It's his brother. I believe the operations manager was specifically referenced in the discrimination suit.
Right. So I would say, based upon all these facts, we certainly have a basis to enter into executive session at this point.
Okay.
I'm a yes.
We have a motion on the floor that's been seconded. All in favor of going into executive session, please signify. All right. Anyone opposed? All right. So,
Mary, we cannot see you, so you can't vote unless we see you. I don't know if you can get a can. There you go.
Yes.
And who are we allowing into executive session?
I'd like to make Tracy.
Thank you.
Yes. And do we want to allow Mr. Markle into executive session? Do people have questions for him and then he could leave for our discussion or not?
Council.
I would strongly encourage us to just keep it to members in executive session for purposes of confidentiality and maintaining it. But I defer to you. I certainly wouldn't have any discussions with any members of the public present.
All right. I think my sense is we have enough information. If we need to get more information, we could ask Fawn to bring him in for a specific question.
I can put in the waiting room. So you're going to let Tracy in. Sorry, folks, you got to let me in to run the meeting. And I assume we're letting Chris Rigucci, our counsel, in?
Yes, but we're not recording. Executive sessions do not get recorded. Is that correct? Correct.
So once you go into, I'm going to put Don, and I believe he's the only person who's not a committee member. I'm going to put Don in the waiting room and turn off the tape. So just give me one moment.
And I see that
I will be here. I need to turn the camera off for a few minutes because I have to take care of something.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm turning off the recording.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, go ahead and make your motion.
I'd like to make a motion we come out of executive session.
I'll second that.
Okay, motion by Legislator Bruno, second by Legislator Criswell. All in favor, please signify. Aye. Anyone oppose? Okay, and now that we are out of executive session, there were two last bits of new business, American Rescue Planning funding. Do we need to talk about that tonight? I'm just looking at the hour. And
can I just suggest that you let the record reflect that no action was taken?
Okay, we came
in
out
executive
of
session.
And no action was taken. Thank you. Is there anything urgent in the new business, which is
just changing dates for the June and July meeting? The public health meeting has moved theirs to June 3rd and July 8th because the office is closed on the Mondays that our meetings would normally fall. So just, you know, we will put these meetings to follow it on the Thursday, June 3rd for the June meeting, and then the July meeting will be on Thursday, July 8th, if that's all right with everyone. We have
anybody oppose? Okay. The Champlain Hudson Power Express, I don't think we need to go into that right now at this hour. And there is an open seat on the Climate Smart Committee, if anyone would reconsider. So at this point, if there's any, thank you, Jason. If there's any other, if there's no other business, I would entertain a motion to adjourn, please.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Okay.
Okay, made by Legislator Petit, seconded by Legislator Criswell. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. And we didn't set, do we need to set another meeting?
No, we just did. It's going to be on June 3rd. Will be, for an executive session?
Yeah.
We did not set a date for that.
Do you want to look and suggest some dates and we'll get back to you?
That would be better. I looked quickly and I see a lot of special meetings with this American Rescue Plan and special ways and means meetings. So I'm not really sure what's available. Wasn't obvious. So I'll do that.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Stay well.
Thank you.
Good night.